Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You could be forgiven, unless you live there or have a financial stake in Canada's oil industry, for pretty much ignoring politics in Alberta. I mean, for more than four decades, it was basically the same. Conservative, pro-oil, generally resentful of equalization payments and various other aspects of the province's relationship with Ottawa, at least to the rest of Canada. But 4 years ago, something weird happened.
We've seen enough, folks. After 44 years of PC rule, Albertans have voted overwhelmingly for change. We're declaring an NDP government here in Alberta.
As we Rachel look at the Notley, program. Alberta's first NDP premier designate, hereafter known as the leader that crushed the Alberta Progressive Conservative dynasty.
Friends, I believe that change has finally come to Alberta.
As historic as Rachel Notley's win was, Alberta is still Alberta, and even an NDP government looks different there. But now the province is getting ready to go to the polls again, and there's a lot at stake. You may have heard something about pipelines, for instance, and about what the price of oil has done to the former boom in the province, and about climate change and carbon pricing, and whether or not Canada's energy capital will be embracing the federal government's approach to curbing emissions. And of course, there's the bigger narrative. At a time where progressive governments around the world seem to be losing ground to conservative and populist movements, will the NDP's historic 2015 victory become a footnote, or will it last as a symbol of a changing province? We're about to find out. When? Sometime really soon? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Jason Markusoff is the Alberta correspondent for Maclean's. You guys are going to vote really soon, right? But we don't know when?
Every other province and the feds and other sensible jurisdictions have fixed election dates, as you might know. Alberta, in its wisdom, did not bring forward a fixed election date in legislation. They legislated a fixed election period, which means every fourth year between March and May, there must be an election. So the NDP government, like many governments, will play that to their advantage, and they're playing a bit of a silly ball with this. It's widely expected, though, that the election campaign will kick off next week. They have scheduled a throne speech on the 18th, Monday. So we're looking like an election call the next day, which leaves a 28-day election period, which means it will be on the Tuesday, April 16th will be the election, unless they change their minds, unless there's rumors that they could wait and wait a while, put out some legislation for a very quick session. The opposition's crying foul, saying that there are all these ads they're running and announcements they're making at the pre-election period, which they should just get the election on with.
They're taking full advantage of them being able to announce stuff and the opposition not being able to do much about it.
Absolutely. And the UCP, the United Conservatives, who are Jason Kenney's opposition party, are really keen to get going with it because they're way ahead in the polls, and their worry is if more changes, time is not on their side.
Right. So there's an NDP government in Alberta, which I kind of find, as somebody who doesn't live in the province, you remind yourself of every once in a while and are still a little bit staggered by it. It's weird. Their term in government is almost over, and it's still weird.
It's been a strange thing for Alberta and for the country. And in some ways, I think Rachel Notley's been able to use that to her advantage, especially on this pipeline thing. I mean, it's kind of striking. I just did a big piece on this, that this NDP government is so resolutely pro-pipeline. It was a pretty big shock for Alberta and the country when they won the NDP. And it took a while for people to get used to it. And still, some people are not used to it. It seems like to some people, especially the people who have grown up in this province conservative, it's a bit of a foreign invasion.
Yeah, and I think most of Canada, and especially I think of Ontario where we are, but also in BC where we're very familiar with NDP provincial governments, we have kind of our own idea of what an NDP government looks like. Surely it must be different in Alberta.
In a big way, every every government kind of bends to responds to its province's needs. In British Columbia, there were some of the same people who were fighting this pipeline in the pipelines in Alberta were fighting the BC forest industry when they were trying to log Clackwit Sound in the 1990s. Some of the same activists. And there was an NDP government in British Columbia back then as well. And this British Columbia government was defending the forestry industry because they knew that that was a major part of the economy. So it is in Alberta. Alberta is the oil province, and any government is only going to be so anti-oil without getting being completely at odds with the business community and the general population. In some ways, this government didn't really have any choice but to be resolutely pro-pipeline if the population was. Rachel Notley and her team didn't come into this this governing term too pro-pipeline. They weren't completely anti-pipeline. They weren't, screw the tar sands, let's diversify and shut it all down and save the planet. But they certainly were more so than they are now. I mean, Notley has become one of the big faces of the pro-pipeline movement in the country. I mean, some of her talking points and the oil lobby's talking points are indistinguishable from each other. One of the ads they've been running in the run-up to this election are ads that, to me, are indistinguishable from those that are used to sell pickup trucks.
We'll do it ourselves. Albertans aren't strangers.
That grinding, thumping, kind of country-style blues guitar.
People yes.
Coveralls and roughnecks. And at the end of it, it says,
"The future is coming.
And it's made in Alberta." That's the posture that the NDP government has decided it has to take if it wants a chance at winning or at least keeping some of their current seat share in this next election.
So for the people who are outside of Alberta or even Albertans who are just getting ready to sort of dive back into an election now, how much of this election is about oil and the pipeline? Is there another issue that can come close to it, or is this the hill that we're fighting on now?
It's a bit of a paradox in this. In some ways, the election won't be about pipelines and oil because every party you're voting for is going to be too a pretty good level.
Right.
Very pro-pipeline. They want to build the pipelines. Some, you know, the United Conservatives under Kenny and Notley's NDP will have disagreements about how tough to get with environmentalists, what approach to take the federal government, whether to try to rattle the cage and try to force something, some action federally, or go to war against the environmentalists. Notley's approach taking a much softer approach on things. So that'll be some of the difference. And this is the challenge for the NDP. They won't get that much thanks or credit for being pro-pipeline because that's just like table stakes in gambling terms. You have to be pro-pipeline for people to start listening to anything else you're going to say. So it's going to ultimately come down to, the election's going to come down to things like the economy. The oil prices have been low with pipelines not coming up. Alberta's oil prices are further depressed and business investment is depressed. And Jason Kenney and his conservatives will pin that on NDP decisions to raise corporate taxes, different regulations. The carbon tax is a big whipping post for him. And Notley is going to be trying to tear down Jason Kenney's character, talk about his social conservatism. He has a long history as somebody who's opposed to abortion and same-sex marriage and LGBT rights, although he's been trying to moderate and sort of quiet his stance and that of his party more lately. And they're also going to do a classic NDP thing, which is express fears that Jason Kenney will slash public services, privatize hospitals and the healthcare system, and just generally create right-wing havoc.
That's the NDP I'm used to out here.
That's it's very classic NDP. In fact, the Jason Kenney has promised to cut corporate taxes that the NDP had raised. He wants to cut them from 12 down to 10, then further down to 8. And the NDP are doing a fairly classic NDP thing, which is saying that that's going to be just a big gift to wealthy people and the corporate class. The NDP has been courting the business community and the oil sector, and they've been trying to get, you know, praise from the big companies like Suncor and Imperial Oil and CNRL, all these major oil companies. And here they are bashing the corporate sector in their way, which is, again, pretty classic NDP thing to do, but hasn't been part of the NDP playbook during this governing period.
Well, I wanted to ask you about Rachel Notley, and we'll talk about Jason Kenney in a second, but how has she balanced that traditional NDP persona that we just talked about with what she needs to do to appeal to Alberta voters who probably aren't that likely to go NDP again? What kind of tightropes does she walk?
It's been tricky. Well, the one thing that she has that makes it easier for her to kind of pull the party to the center is that the NDP government is, there's not a lot of egos in her her caucus or cabinet. Everybody's pretty much happy to enjoy the ride, let her and her staff corps lead the way. It's a very, very centralized government from everything we hear. Her and her her staff pretty much run everything. Nothing much gets by them. And they've been doing that because they weren't really confident that their fellow crop of newbies really had a great sense of what they were going to be able to do. That's been one of the things she's been doing. So she's been able to lead because there's not a whole lot of dissent or debate in her within her government. And they've been pretty much survivalistic, that they want to make sure that they're in the mainstream. They don't want to just push through a whole bunch of things that they know are going to be unpopular. That said, they have taken some measures that are classically NDP. They've brought up Alberta's minimum wage. They're the first province with $15 minimum wage, which the business community hates, as is pretty predictable. They did raise corporate taxes. They raised personal income taxes. They've improved a lot of the labor and safety standards that were pretty much lowest in Canada under the Progressive Conservative government before. So they've provided some meat to the base, but there was such a small base to start with that they didn't have to worry too much about that base. What they need to do is they need to approach the non-traditional NDP voters because that's who elected them in the first place.
Right. And where do those non-traditional voters stand? Because I know Kenney and the UCP are leading substantially in the polls. Is that because she's lost voters she had before, or is it just a factor of uniting the two right-wing parties?
It's mostly the latter. It's mostly that Jason Kenney took the Progressive Conservatives, which were kind of a Alberta's centrist brokerage, non-ideological, but leaning pretty consistently to the right party, and the Wild Rose, this grassroots reform style right-wing faction. He was able to merge them and keep most of that base intact. And the NDP got 40% or 47% of the vote last time. That's still not a majority. Yeah. The NDP, though, to their credit, have been able to hold about three quarters of their numbers. They still tend to pull in the 30s in percentage-wise terms. So their vote hasn't completely collapsed like it did, say, for Bob Rae in the 1990s when he tried to seek re-election for his NDP government. I think it's because they've been trying to be fairly moderate and because there's this really dramatic binary politics being developed in Alberta right now, where it's the service protecting NDP versus the service cutting UCP to some view, or to some it's the economy protecting UCP versus the economy destroying NDP. This election is being cast by both sides in very dire terms, which hasn't allowed for much room for any third parties to gain any steam.
So if the NDP haven't lost a ton of their support and they're just kind of outnumbered, is there anything left that could change the expected outcome? Is the UCP vulnerable to anything? What problems do they have?
The UCP are pretty confident that they're going to win. I mean, word is that they're doing a lot to plan for their transition. They've been leading the polls for pretty much since their party formed in 2017. And Kenney's been popular throughout. But they are worried that he or somebody else in their party is found to have said something really stupid and they lose it. That's happened in the past,
right,
with the federal conservatives. Harper's party was often undone by rogue comments on climate change or abortion or LGBT rights. So they're worried about something on that front. And that's where the NDP is going to be pushing hard, that they're going to be trying to erode the character and credibility of the UCPs, talked about them as regressives, as social Neanderthals. They seem to think that that's one of their best shots at it. And there is some worry on the UCP side that could happen. But I do have to say that the NDP has been pushing that for the better part of 3 years, and the polls have stayed remarkably static. It strikes me that a lot of Albertans are still worried first and foremost about the economy, about the joblessness rate, which is higher than anywhere else in outside of the Maritimes right now. And they believe that the UCP will bring that back. Restore the Alberta advantage is one of the leading slogans of Jason Kenney's Conservatives. Now, that harkens directly back to the Ralph Klein days when oil prices were great, natural gas prices were great, taxes were low, and the economy was booming beyond any measure.
What kind of role does relatively random fluctuations in the price of oil due to global circumstances play in an Alberta election? Are you kind of always playing roulette out there?
If oil prices were back to $100 like they were a year before Rich Notley was elected, and they had surpluses and they could spend like traditional New Democratic governments, and we were getting pipelines in the ground and everything was going well, we could be seriously talking about another, a second NDP term. But the reality is that oil prices, most people believe, might never get back up to the lofty days they were earlier this decade or through much of last decade.
So if Notley loses, it's another progressive white woman losing to a white conservative man from a traditional party. Is that the same narrative, and is it the same out there that we've been seeing in Ontario and in the United States? Does this fit into that chain, or is there something else going on in Alberta?
It's so different. And you know what, the funny thing about comparing those two is that people were really fed up with Kathleen Wynne at the end, it seemed. Hillary Clinton had a lot of negatives. If there's one word that you tend to hear associated with Rachel Notley, in addition to that people find her intelligent, it's likable. Even Jason Kenney won't mention her by name because he knows that she is popular, and he also doesn't want to be seen as, you know, dumping on a female politician. Jason Kenney knows that his party has a bad rep for being, you know, very masculine and male, and he's actually been, to almost humorous extents, trying to court female candidates and support female candidates and bring them in. It's been a huge goal of his to try to squash that perceived negative or liability in his party. But Notley is the best thing that the NDP have going for them. Their campaign website is rachelnotley.ca. On most of the campaign material, the signs they're waving at the pre-campaign rallies, The letters N and D and P may appear in the signs, but usually not in that order. They know that the NDP brand is weak, but Notley's personal brand, even among some conservatives, is still very strong. Jason Kenney's brand is not as great compared to where the conservative brand is. People like the idea of conservatives. A lot of people like Kenney. They admire his cunning, his competence, but his negatives tend to drag the party down, whereas it's the opposite for Rachel Notley and the NDP.
Given that support for the pipeline and support for the oil industry is kind of table stakes, is there anything in Alberta that will change really quickly if and when Jason Kenney and the UCP win?
We're going to get in the middle of a carbon tax fight that Ontario and Saskatchewan and Manitoba and New Brunswick are in. That's going to be one. He's going to be trying to do some of that same open for business stuff that Doug Ford has been doing, albeit not with goofy signs on the highways, but more with corporate tax cuts. He's going to be taking the knife to regulations. You know what? They're going to be going to war with the federal government. We're going to see a very, very sharply negative approach toward the federal government from a Jason Kenney government.
Will that actually help the pipeline get built faster? Is there anything Kenney can do?
That's going to be one of the interesting questions being posed to Albertans right now. And it seems like they're deciding that maybe this go nice approach, this gentle approach that Notley took, trying to bring people along, build consensus, didn't work. Notley can point to quite a number of polls that show that support for the Trans Mountain Pipeline is actually up across the country. The problem is that the blockage is very much at the margins. It's a lot of environmentalists in the predominantly clustered around the lower mainland in BC. It's some, not all, not by any means all, indigenous groups that are opposing the pipeline. But Jason Kenney is now confident that he can win Alberta on what he literally calls a fight back strategy, that he's going to take environmentalists to court and fight against what, you know, is called their foreign sources of funding, which is a partial source of their funding. American philanthropic groups do like to fight the oil sands, it's true. A lot of Albertans I speak to, including some in the oil patch, think that the softer approach didn't work and now it's time to go to war, and Kenny is their warrior.
And we'll see, I guess. Well, I was going to give a specific date, but I guess we don't have one.
April 16th-ish, or maybe a bit later. Let's say April.
Jason Markusoff, Alberta correspondent, McLean's. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can visit us, thebigstorypodcast.ca. All of our episodes are right there. And of course, frequencypodcastnetwork.com for us and our brother and sister shows. And on Twitter, @FrequencyPods and @TheBigStoryFPN. And we are @FrequencyPods on Facebook and on Instagram too. Most importantly, everywhere you get your podcasts, you will find us, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. There is a new podcast app out. It's called Listen. We haven't even looked at it, but some of you have listened to us on it. And thank you. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.